is just a nightmare inside of me anymore.
And he's trying to change that. This is Wednesday, the 26th of May, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. wants the World Health Organization to conduct another investigation into the origins of COVID-19. A U.S. advisory against travel to Japan. U.S. states are thinking of ways to overcome vaccine hesitancy. Guardian angels on the streets of New York fighting Asian hate crime. An eye exam might be as close as your smartphone. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The announcement this past week of new coordinated sanctions against Myanmar's military rulers by a handful of Western governments has been welcomed by the UN independent expert monitoring the human rights situation in the country. UN Special Rapporteur Tom Andrews is urging all countries to follow the path taken by the United States, the United Kingdom, and Canada. We welcome Tom Andrews to VOA Asia. Tom, thanks for being with us. What precipitated this call from you? What parts of these latest sanctions do you feel might have made progress in the efforts to return Myanmar's civilian government?
Well, two aspects were very important. The first is that the United States, at least, took a major step forward by designating not just individual industries or individuals, but also the junta itself, the State Administrative Council, for sanctions. So that is a step forward. The second point is that these three countries, as you noted, the UK, Canada, and the United States, announced this in a coordinated fashion. It is critical, I believe, that sanctions be coordinated among those countries, all countries, who want to stand with the people of Myanmar, and that the strongest possible sanctions be incorporated into that sanctions regime. What is very important is that those countries who want to pressure the junta do so in a coordinated way so that together, linked together, those sanctions will deliver the strongest possible punch against the junta. So that is exactly what I think needs to happen. The ideal way to do that is through the United Nations Security Council. I do not see that being a viable option, at least in the short run. And so if in fact the Security Council cannot act or will not act, it makes it imperative that those countries who do want to act do so in a coordinated, focused, tough fashion.
Why has this been so difficult?
Well, you know, first of all, this is just a nightmare inside of Myanmar. There are most people, myself included, did not believe that this was going to happen. The military had such extraordinary power and autonomy within the Constitution that they wrote that they turned out to violate in their overthrowing of the government. In other words, they set up rules designed to give them maximum power, and then they decided it wasn't enough, and they overturned even their own rules. So this has been, first of all, a surprise for many when it happened on February 1st. And then it has been a disaster upon disaster upon disaster ever since. I think it's just so important for countries around the world to keep their focus on what's going on in Myanmar. I think that the worst thing that could happen right now is for attention to be diverted away. Time is not on the side of those of us who want to see an end to this nightmare. We need to focus attention, we need to focus action, and we need to do it now. And one of the issues that is, of course, so disturbing that as we watch developments unfold in Myanmar is not only the systematic brutality of the Myanmar military, the steady rise in those who have been assassinated, murdered by the regime, the steady rise of those who have been detained, the journalists that have been detained, the efforts that the junta is making to prevent the truth from getting out. In addition to that, we're seeing increasingly people so desperate to defend themselves that they are taking up weapons, crude weapons. But they feel that in light of what they perceive as inaction by the international community, their only recourse is to take up arms. I think that is very, very troubling, deeply troubling. I think it should trouble everyone. And so for me, it means that it is that much more of an imperative for the international community to step up and take these strong sanctions, step up with an arms embargo, make it very clear to the people of Myanmar that we are indeed with them. And we are going to work together to cut the revenue that is fueling this military machine that is attacking the people of Myanmar. It's vitally important that we do so. Because if we don't, I think that what we'll see is a continuing downward spiral, increasing violence, increasing loss of life, and a disaster that would exceed even the gruesome numbers that we're seeing right now coming out of Myanmar. So it's a disaster right now. I think it could be much, much worse if the international community fails to take action.
Tom Andrews is the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Myanmar. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. officials are reaching out to Islamabad, urging Pakistan to do more to prevent Afghanistan from falling apart. Vietnam expands lockdown measures as infections hit a record. Nepal says Everest climbing continues despite reports of COVID-19. More than 200 injured when two trains collide in the Malaysian capital. Four people have been arrested in Indonesia for allegedly stealing COVID-19 vaccines marked for prisoners and selling them to the public. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra Tuesday called on the World Health Organization to conduct a second, more fully transparent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. The WHO issued a joint statement with Chinese scientists in March after the agency led a four-week mission to the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the first cases of the coronavirus emerged in December of 2019. But the U.S. and other nations raised concerns about the way the mission was carried out and the lack of cooperation from China. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus also agreed that further studies were needed into the virus's origins. In a video message at the annual ministerial meeting of the WHO's World Health Assembly, Becerra called for a second phase of the investigation to be launched with terms of reference that are transparent, science-based, and give international experts the independence to fully assess the source of the virus and the early days of the outbreak. Becerra did not mention China directly, but his remarks follow a Wall Street Journal report Sunday in which U.S. officials are quoted as saying three Chinese researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology sought hospital care in November 2019, a month before the first confirmed coronavirus case in China. Monday, the head of the World Health Organization warned vaccine inequity is prolonging the COVID-19 pandemic, and this crisis will not end until transmission of the coronavirus is stopped in all countries. He spoke at the opening session of the 74th World Health Assembly. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus paid tribute Monday to the courage of the many health and care workers who have worked valiantly to save the lives of millions of people, often at the cost of their own lives. He estimates 150,000 have died, many because they lacked the personal protective equipment and vaccines that could have saved them. He accused the wealthy countries of hoarding life-saving vaccines and perpetuating the pandemic. He knows more than 75% of all vaccines have been administered in just 10 countries. This compared to just 2% of doses in the poorer countries. He called this vaccine inequity scandalous. He said it was unconscionable. A small group of countries countries that make and buy most of the world's vaccines control the fate of the rest of the world. He added the global situation remains very fragile, and wealthy countries should not be complacent about their ability to beat the virus.
No country should assume it's out of the woods, no matter its vaccination rate. This virus is changing constantly. Future changes could render our tools ineffective and drag us back to square one.
Tedros said one of the greatest drivers of this pandemic has been the lack of international solidarity and the sharing of data, information, pathogens, resources, and technology.
We can only address that fundamental weakness with a binding commitment between nations to provide a solid foundation for enhanced cooperation, a treaty on pandemic preparedness and response that can address the challenges that I have outlined. An international agreement that represents all nations and people.
Discussions are expected to take place at the Assembly on whether to begin negotiations on formulating a legally binding pandemic treaty to better prepare for and prevent infectious outbreaks. To date, the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control is the only treaty that has been negotiated under the auspices of the World Health Organization. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ahead on VOA Asia, Washington warns against travel to Japan. Stay with us. Happening now in Asia, the United Nations has urged political leaders in Samoa to resolve a political crisis through dialogue after contested election results left the South Pacific nation with two leaders claiming to run the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for spending part of your day with us on VOA Asia. Top Japanese officials said Tuesday they did not expect a U.S. advisory against travel to Japan amid worries about the coronavirus to affect the Tokyo Olympics less than 2 months away, and that U.S. support for the Games was unchanged. Libby Hogan has more.
The U.S. State Department has now advised against travel to Japan as it grapples with a new wave of coronavirus cases. The news on Tuesday comes just months before the Tokyo Olympics are set to be held, and Japan was quick to respond. Chief Cabinet Secretary Katsunobu Kato said hours later that the advisory won't affect U.S. support for actually holding the Games.
We believe that there is no change in the U.S. position to support the Japanese government's determination to realize the hosting of the Tokyo Olympics and Paralympics.
The U.S. Do Not Travel Advisory and Guidance for Japan did not mention the Olympics specifically, but warned against visiting the country at this time. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympics Committee said in a statement to Reuters that it was aware of the updated travel advisory, but was, quote, confident that the current mitigation practices in place for athletes and staff, including testing before arrival and during the Games time, will allow for safe participation. The Games are scheduled to kick off on July 23rd, even under Japan's state of emergency.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan reporting. The Tokyo Olympics are scheduled to take place from July 23rd to August 8th after a one-year postponement as the novel coronavirus pandemic began spreading across the globe. But the Japanese capital and other parts of Japan are under a state of emergency to quell a surge of new infections that has overwhelmed hospitals across the country, prompting growing public sentiment against staging the event. The opposition was boosted by an open letter earlier this month from the Tokyo Medical Practitioners Association, which represents about 6,000 primary care doctors and hospitals, urging Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga to convince the International Olympic Committee to cancel the Games. The current outbreak has already prompted Japanese authorities to ban foreign audiences from attending the Olympics. Japan has recorded 722,668 total COVID-19 infections and 12,351 deaths, but has only inoculated just under 5% of its population. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam Tuesday defended Hong Kong as an attractive place for businesses after a recent survey found foreigners were considering leaving the longtime Asian business hub. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now on VOA Asia. As vaccination rates in the United States slip, states are thinking of ways to overcome vaccine hesitancy by providing incentives for people to get their COVID shots. Valentina Vasileva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
$1 million for getting a COVID vaccine? Not likely, but local authorities in some American states seem willing to do almost anything to encourage people to get vaccinated. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine recently announced that 5 randomly chosen people who get their shots in June and early July will get $1 million cash prize.
My fellow citizens, let's do this, Ohio. Let's get it done. Let's get everyone vaccinated. Because we are Ohioans, we are Buckeyes, we're strong, and we will finish the job.
Every Wednesday, Ohio authorities will announce the lucky winner of a weekly lottery. The prize money comes from federal funds. The state is also incentivizing teenagers to get vaccinated. One lucky kid will get a 4-year stipend and full tuition at the university of his or her choice, including room and board, fees, and books. But not everyone approves of these incentives. Twitter users have widely criticized the governor's actions. Governor DeWine responded to critics by saying that choosing not to get vaccinated is irresponsible. And right now, less than 40% of Ohio's population is fully vaccinated. The rest are either undecided or don't want a vaccine at all. It's this vaccine hesitancy that political leaders are trying to overcome.
For those who get their first shot between now and Memorial Day, we're offering a voucher from our Fish and Wildlife Department and our parks and conservation folks, and from retailers like L.L. Bean, the Portland Sea Dogs, our minor league baseball team, Charlie knows so well, and the Oxford Plains Speedway, our biggest racetrack.
Since the start of May, vaccination rates across the U.S. have been falling, and medical centers offering vaccines have been closing due to the lack of patients. For life to return to normal, public health experts say tens of millions more Americans need to get the shot. And while incentives like money, tickets, and even a free glass of beer can help motivate people, health experts say raising awareness about the vaccine is key.
This may not be the right incentive for everyone, but, you know, what people should look for and ask questions about is about the vaccine itself. And so these incentives are really a way to get people to think about the vaccine and to talk about the vaccine.
Whether or not these measures are effective will become clearer by the 4th of July holiday. The date is not accidental. President Biden has set a goal that by Independence Day, 70% of the U.S. population will have the vaccine. Right now, nationwide, just under 38% is fully vaccinated. For Valentina Vasileva in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia. As authorities try to move over 1 million people to safety from low-lying areas, a tornado ripped through eastern India Tuesday, killing at least 2 people and damaging dozens of homes as a powerful cyclone neared the coast. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in a bid to combat the sharp increase in hate crimes targeting people of Asian descent in New York, a group of volunteers called the Guardian Angels has ramped up its presence. VOA's Janine Pakditam takes you on a patrol in the Big Apple alongside the Angels.
New York City's Guardian Angels are hard to miss when patrolling the streets and the subway trains with their red berets. Since the surge of violence and hostilities towards Asians from the COVID-19 pandemic, the group of crime prevention volunteers has ramped up their patrols in areas of New York City with a high Asian population.
Lately, crime against Asians, racists, but usually they're eyeing your phone or they're eyeing your purse. They love to target the elderly.
Chris starts off the patrol by taking his squad to the 109th precinct to check in with the police.
Oh, wait, listen, we could use you guys. Thank you so much for doing this. And I'm sure the community loves it too. If you need anything, you have my number. I'll be on patrol for the rest of the day.
All right. But it was not always like this. The Neighborhood Watch Group, which got its starts in the late 1970s, had faced controversy throughout the past four decades and had their share of run-ins with the police because of their tactics. But right now, with anti-Asian sentiment running high, some commuters are glad they're here, like this woman who asked to remain anonymous.
I avoid taking the train or at least not riding it alone. It's a blessing that I work from home now. Overall, I don't feel very safe.
That's why Chris and his team focus their watch on public transit.
Every 30 seconds, we'll watch the next spot.
The reason why I joined is, aside from all the whole situation with Asian hate going on, hate just has, you know, will not stop. I was, bullied in high school, going to school, working at a bar. I've seen the craziest things happen, so.
Chris is looking for volunteers who can speak languages other than English in order to help victims feel more comfortable discussing and reporting the incidents.
We need those that can speak Thai, Vietnamese. I'm looking for Asians, especially crime against Asians. I'm looking for them.
Since the beginning of 2021, NYPD has received at least 39 reports of anti-Asian hate crimes, already surpassing the figure of 28 cases in the previous year. Janine Pakditam, VOA News, New York.
We continue on VOA Asia. Some might put off a visit to the eye doctor, but one company has come up with a way for patients to administer their own vision exam at home using a smartphone. Tina Trin has more.
Thanks to the pandemic, people worldwide have had trouble visiting a doctor in person. One company, IQ, is letting patients play the eye doctor at home.
We have been focused on developing affordable, accessible, and accurate vision tests that you can do on your smartphone.
IQ's Vision Check 2 is a device that works with a smartphone to administer eye exams for nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism. In a series of tests, users are shown two lines at various angles on the horizon and use the Vision Check 2 device to adjust them until they overlap.
It's based on a MIT patented technology that is licensed exclusively to IQ. The test basically projects a couple of beams of light into your eye, and we're able to reverse calculate the power you need to see clearly.
Phoebe Yu is the marketing director for IQ. She says Vision Check 2 isn't meant to replace a doctor entirely.
If you just needed updated numbers for new glasses so you can see clearly, our product can fulfill that need for you.
With the pandemic limiting travel, the company has seen an uptick in business.
People are more willing to kind of seek out other solutions that they can do at home and with a greater level of convenience in general.
Yu says there are major implications for those in the developing world.
For people who do not have traditional access to eye care, they don't have a qualified doctor, they can't get to where they need to go, a low-cost solution like ours could really change people's lives.
As the pandemic wears on, this at-home eye exam is one vision for a more accessible and self-empowered approach to eyesight. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at VOAnews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead.